I'm Father Louis Logan. I'm just elected Superior General of the Missionary Oblates of Mary Immaculate, and I've been in the United States for the last 13 years. I was provincial there for 6 years. Before that, I was in Brazil as a missionary for 18 years. Originally, I come from Buffalo, New York.
Now, tell us, first of all, if you can, your reactions. It's a huge job that you're taking on. What was your first reactions to the news?
It's overwhelming. You know, I'm not worthy. And I think we're at a moment, you know, of change, a lot of changes in the church and in the congregation. So it's a big responsibility. But in the end of the day, I think of our faith and the grace of state. We always say, you know, God will give us the grace to do what we need to do. So I believe in that, and it gave me a lot of peace. But it was an emotional experience. It brought tears to my eyes. And to be recognized like this by so many of my brothers is a great responsibility and a great act of love, I believe. So it's overwhelming.
You're meeting here in your general chapter, focusing on the theme of conversion, mm-hmm. aren't you? New heart, new spirit, new mission. Tell us a little bit about that, what it means.
Okay, it's quite a theme. It came up 3 years ago. We had an interchapter in South Africa where the provincials gathered, and we were talking about the challenges we face throughout the world as oblates. And, you know, every region has its own challenges, and we said, well, what is underneath this? What's the common thread? And little by little, it came out that really we're being called to reconnect with the gospel, reconnect to the mission that the church gives us, and we heard the call to conversion. So if we could both as individuals and as communities hear the good news and let it shape our lives, our mission would be done with greater zeal, with greater enthusiasm, with greater effectiveness for God's kingdom. So I see the theme of conversion is very strongly connected to our mission as Oblates of Mary Immaculate.
Tell us a little bit about the order. It's a relatively new congregation, isn't it? Tell us
right.
a little bit about the history, first of all.
Okay, well, Eugene de Mazenod was a Provençal, a nobleman during the French Revolution. He went to Italy for exile. He came back to France and found a different country and found the church had been pretty much emptied out. And he was in a crisis. He was a young man when he returned to France, looking for meaning in his life. And on a Good Friday, 1807, before the crucifix, he had an overwhelming experience of God's unconditional love. And that gave him direction and a focus. And he began to gather the youth. He began to visit prisons. And eventually he said, I want to be a priest and servant of the poor. So he began preaching missions. He was ordained, went to Saint Sulpice in Paris, became a priest, and then started doing missions in rural France, preaching the gospel to the poor. So in 1816, he joined this group, he got together a group of priests to found the missionaries of Provence. And 10 years later, in 1826, the Pope approved us as a congregation in the church. So we are pretty young. We're teenagers.
Tell us a little bit about the organization today. You're present in over 60 countries, aren't you, worldwide?
Right. We're about 4,200 oblates in 67 countries, the five continents. And I have to get my figures straight, you know, but I think we're about 45 provinces, which are the bigger groupings of oblates throughout the world. And then we have delegations and missions everywhere. And, you know, one of our big challenges is the demographic changes. In Europe and North America, we're diminishing, we're older. We had a wonderful, glorious past. And in Latin America, Africa, and Asia, we're younger and we're growing. So that is shaping the face of the congregation right now.
So it's fair to say that the emphasis, perhaps, of your work is now focused on those continents, Africa, Latin America, Asia.
Right, that's where the youth are. But even as that is an emphasis, we're also in Europe and North America trying to understand how the gospel can be preached, how we can evangelize secularized areas of the. So we're still vital, but smaller.
A huge challenge, isn't it? Particularly in this secular context.
It really is. I think the Pope's visit to England recently is an example before it, how much controversy and even rejection. But when they met the Pope, there was quite an openness there. So what we feel is people are hungering for the spiritual. They get kind of what we just say, they reject the church or institutions looking for the spiritual. And I think somehow we have to connect the beauty, the grace, the wonder of our church with what people are looking for. Connect those two. And I really think a fire will reignite the faith in those countries.
You have oblates working in many different areas, don't you? What would you say is the particular charism, though? What do people particularly look to your congregation for?
We're close to the poor. Wherever you go, I was provincial in the States up till today, and it was so wonderful and a privilege to go around the country, and I would meet the people and the people's love for the oblates. So we preach the gospel to the poor, and there is a special relationship, a special closeness we have that marks the oblates. That's really an essential mark of our charism.
You talked about your work in Brazil in a past life. Tell us a little bit about your experiences there, working again, I imagine, with the poorest communities.
Right. I would say, you know, it was a graced 18 years. I learned to be a priest in Brazil. I went as a deacon. I was ordained and then stayed until the end of 1996. And a marvelous people of deep faith, very poor. I worked in the favelas and I worked with formation of young men throughout those years. I learned, and I think that's part of our charism, we go to preach the gospel to the poor, but the poor also teach us and evangelize us. And I learned the joy of simplicity. I learned the generosity when people have nothing, how they will share. I saw their forgiveness, powerful, deep forgiveness, tremendous vitality against, you know, tremendous odds against them. So, as I say, it was a wonderful 18 years that taught me, I say, more than I taught them. I think I received from the people, and I love them dearly. And if I'm a priest today, it's because of what the Brazilian people taught me.
In Brazil, like in many of those countries throughout Latin America, of course, the Catholic Church is facing a drop in numbers, mainly, of course, because of the advance of the Protestant sects that are claiming so many converts to their churches. How did you relate to that during your time?
Well, I saw it. It was beginning when I was there. You know, it's hard to put a finger on it, but I'd say, you know, the custom in Brazil and a lot of Latin America is to baptize. That's driven into the people, the church, the first missionaries. You have to baptize. I don't think in a lot of instances the church had the capacity to catechize. And so when another religion comes along, people could be convinced, you know, and follow it because their roots in Catholicism are not that deep. They've been baptized. But they have not been catechized. So, and the sheer number of people was always the challenge. How do you evangelize so many people? And I know now they are having more vocations in Brazil, so I'm happy to hear that. But I'd say that was the gap there to evangelize all the people who have been baptized. There was kind of a gap there that we have to work on.
You're also working in, for example, Africa or indeed in Asia, in countries where Christianity is a small minority. Again, I imagine interfaith must be an integral part of your training, your work as oblates.
Right, and it's a big question here at our chapter where we're often the minority, like in Asia, and the greater, the older religions might not even consider us important. How do you begin a dialogue? They say, well, who are you to ask for a dialogue? So we're talking about that, our presence in the midst of Asia's countries like India or China. How do we relate to others? In Africa, I go there once a year because our province in the States has a mission. You see the gospel being embraced by great numbers, with enormous vitality and joy. It's really a different situation. But again, respectfully, we're seeking to dialogue with the people who have their native religions, those who might be of other Christian traditions, or Muslim or Hindu faiths, you know. So we're trying to prepare our missionaries with a respectful dialogue in those countries also.
Finally, a personal question. Perhaps what do you see as the biggest challenges for you in the years ahead now?
The biggest challenge, I guess, will be in this varied reality. We're in 67 countries, everybody facing different changes, different challenges. How do we remain united and a deep communion of oblate life with one another? I mean, that is what is on my mind right now. You know, how you animate a whole congregation respecting the different realities everywhere. So we want structures that are collaborative and fraternal, participative. We've talked a lot about that these days. So how to have those good structures that communicate life and animate zeal for all of us and keep us united and close to the poor always. The poor always.